All right, my pleasure. Okay, a little bit of Parsha as well. Saying brachos is a staple of Orthodox Jewish life. We're taught brachos from the youngest of ages, and it's in this week's Parsha. Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Me'imach. So Chazal tell us, Al Tikri Ma Ela Me'ya, that each of our days is supposed to be punctuated by no less than 100 brachos. There are even times when people, at least in my experience, people talk to me, it seems that they wish there was a bracha, but there just isn't one. You know, a person is about to begin a treatment of a serious illness, recently asked me what bracha she might say for the treatment to go well. There's a tefillah to say, but is there a bracha? We don't really have a specific bracha for that. I'm often asked by people who went through some sort of harrowing circumstance or near trauma, whether they're allowed to recite a Birch Sagomel, and you could see in their eyes, they so desperately want the answer to be yes. The answer is not always yes, but they so desperately want the answer to be yes, because they feel like there needs to be a bracha. And it's so amazing that our first reaction to life's events is to want to recite a bracha. So where does that all begin? There are only two brachas that are potentially mitzvos d'oraisa: Birchas HaMazon, according to everybody, and Birchas HaTorah, according to most. And it seems striking that the only two brachos that are daraisa are almost exact opposites of each other. One on the most animalistic and physical of urges, and the other on the loftiest of heavenly pursuits. There's so much room in between. A bracha on thunder or lightning, for example, it's a response to something in the physical world, but it expresses amazement at the might of God. I remember I was in camp a few weeks ago. I was in the middle of giving a shiur, and all of a sudden there was a burst of lightning. It was the loudest sound I ever heard. What do you mean, sound? Lightning doesn't make any sound? Because the lightning had hit a tree, and it took down a tree, like right in front of our eyes. Thank God there were no kids near the tree. And that was an act of God like nothing I've ever seen. This bolt came out of the sky, hit this tree, and knocked down the whole tree. It was unbelievable. So it's on the one hand, it's something physical. On the other hand, it's the wonder of and the amazement of the Ribbono Shel Olam. But that's at least somewhere in between. Why are these the only two brachos recorded in the Torah? Two extremes. Eating, which is this animalistic urge, and Torah, which is purely spiritual. Furthermore, the Gemara in Brachos in a few places points out the most obvious difference between these two brachos. Birchas HaMazon is recited after we eat. Also, V'achalta v'savata uverachta. Birchas HaTorah is recited before we learn. Ki Shem Hashem Ekra Havuko Delelukenu. And yet, Chazal instituted Birchas HaMazon before we eat as well. Yet they never instituted Birchas HaTorah at the end of a Seder Limud. You get up for morning Seder, we finish this shiur today, and then we're not going to say a Birchas HaTorah. Why would food warrant a bracha before and after, while Torah only warrants a bracha before and not after? So maybe we can suggest that by singling out these two experiences to recite a bracha on, the Torah signals some very important lessons about Torah specifically, and about the pursuit of ruchnius in general. Torah tells us to say a bracha on food because food is the most basic need that can be understood and appreciated by all humanity. The food experience is perfectly positioned to serve as the greatest mashal, the greatest metaphor for the Torah experience. I once gave a Shabbos Shuvah drasha, and I kept on using a diet as an example of self-control, refraining from sin. And someone came over to me afterwards and said, it's not nice. You know, there are people that struggle with dieting, and you keep using a diet as an example. I'm not saying you keep giving mussar about how everyone has to diet. No, my mussar was not that everyone has to diet. The point is, it's a great mushel for us, because everyone can identify with the urge to eat. So it's something that's so easily identifiable, so universal to the human experience. And the Torah recognizes this mashal. Had the Torah taught us the bracha on a solar eclipse, for instance, we run the risk of people who are simply not interested or fascinated by it. Some people are, and they got to see what's going on in the sky. Other people are too busy looking at their phones to look up at the sky. They're not really interested in what's going on up in the sky. A nimshal is only going to be as strong as the mashal. So the Torah chooses the most universally understood and enjoyed mashal, which is eating. So in what way is eating such a great serve as a mashal for ruchnius? Because like food, Torah is something that a Jew needs to survive. A Jew should crave it like he is hungry. We cannot imagine going days at a time without food, and we should not be able to imagine going days at a time without Torah. We cannot imagine a person saying, hey, I don't have to eat because I ate a lot when I was younger. You know, I was a teenager, I ate a lot, so I don't really need to eat right now. No, you're not a teenager anymore. You need to continue to eat when you get older. So we should not be able to imagine a person who's able to say that he's too busy to nourish his soul when he's older because he learned in yeshiva when he was younger. A second point of parallel is that just as a person needs a somewhat diverse diet, you need to have proteins and carbs and fruits, a person also needs a somewhat diverse knowledge of Torah. A person cannot simply study a single area of Torah and be a healthy person. Gemara says, Shlish b'mikra, Shlish b'mishnah, Shlish b'talmud. It doesn't necessarily have to be an equal measure. The Rishonim point out, the Rambam and others point out, the ratios can be adjusted based on your own proclivities, based on your own desires, based on your own comfort zone. But there must be some diversity. It can't be only one form of Torah. And then a third parallel. In today's day and age, this comparison between food and Torah takes on entirely new meaning, because the way that we relate to food and to Gashmis today is so different than anyone in previous generations ever had. You know, we read in this week's parasha about the great miracles that Hashem performed for us in the Midbar. Our clothing grew with us. We had the miraculous man that tasted like whatever we wanted it to taste like. In any other time and any other place, both of these things are amazing and would be universally appreciated. That your clothing just grows with you. You don't have to buy new clothing. You know, now's coming up on the school year, everyone's going shopping for new clothing. You don't have to do it. It's just going to grow with the children. Amazing. Throughout history, that would have been something that's extraordinary. You put a morsel of food in your mouth and it tastes like whatever you want it to taste like. That's remarkable. That's something we always would have appreciated. But we live in very strange times, and maybe even our extremely unhealthy relationship with Gashmius can serve as a model for Ruchnius. Because in today's day and age, one can ask, why would I want my clothing to grow with me for 4 decades and never get ruined? Then I'm going to be left with clothing that's 4 decades out of style. My clothing is not going to be stylish anymore. We're not interested in that miracle anymore. I need to upgrade my wardrobe every time, you know, Paris and wherever else they make clothing tells me I'm supposed to update my wardrobe. And it's a question, it would have been unimaginable at other points in history. But, you know, I'm living here in the Five Towns, and you, wherever you are in Los Angeles, and I see other places on the Zoom as well, and we could easily imagine, you know, a teenager, you know, or a child learning this Indian in school about the clothing growing with them and saying, excuse me, why is that good? I would end up with, you know, in 2020 with bell bottoms and, you know, like, well, why is that good? I'm not interested in that. And if a child would ask it, an adult would think it, right? When viewed from a spiritual perspective, nothing ever grows out of style. Physical preferences change, and what's considered fashionable in one generation is considered absurd in another. But our holy Torah is timeless and will always connect generations with each other. Also, when it comes to the man, one can imagine the question, I don't want food that's going to taste like whatever I want it to taste like. I want something, and this is again unique to our generation, I want something that will excite the palate. I never heard this term till recently. Meaning, if I can't go to a restaurant that just has a good steak, I know what steak tastes like. I want to go to a restaurant that has a taste that I've never tasted before. That's going to put pomegranates in the steak, or it's going to come up with some way that it's going to make, you know, just a mix of tart and sweetness and this and that. And a great restaurant is no longer one that serves reliably good dishes. It's where every dish is stranger than the next, so that my taste buds can explore undiscovered vistas. Now, I would, after this, I'm going to call my grandfather to say good Shabbos. My grandfather is a survivor of Buchenwald and Auschwitz. I wonder if I could explain that to him, explain that that concept to him. I don't think he would follow. I don't think he'd even understand this concept. We have a concept today of someone who's called not just a person who likes food, but it's a very identity, a foodie. That is what they are. That is how they identify. That's how they self-identify as a foodie. That is a very unhealthy relationship with Gashmius. But maybe even that taiva can serve as a model for Ruchnius. It's not enough to have what we have always had and just repeat. We should be looking for something new to excite our neshamas. When a Talmud quoted the line from Rav Sham Shimon Fal Hirsch about Hashem will ask us after 120 years whether we saw his Swiss Alps, Rav Meisha Tversky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, responded, maybe so. Maybe Hashem will ask whether we saw his Swiss Alps after 120 years. But you know what he'll definitely ask? He'll ask, have you seen my Maseches Krisus? Have you seen my Maseches Me'ila? How about the unexplored vistas in Ruchnius? How about finding all these exciting new tastes in the Ruchnius of Torah? And not only are there similarities between physical and spiritual pursuits, but there are also important differences as well that are brought into much sharper contrast when you view them side by side. First, whether the limit of what you can consume is that of a small child or whether it's that of a competitive eating champion, like in the 4th of July Nathan's competition, you do have a limit. Everyone has, even Joey Chestnut can't eat more than whatever it is, 90 hot dogs in 12 minutes or something like that. There comes a time where you just can't have any more. By contrast, there is no point in time where one is full from learning Torah. There's no point in time where a person is finished. Rabbi Emanuel Feldman tells a story from his early days as a rabbi in Atlanta, Georgia, when a congregant saw him learning, and in all earnestness, the congregant said, well, why are you what are you doing? He said, I'm learning. He said, oh, I won't tell anyone. I didn't realize you didn't pass your exams yet, that you still need to be studying. From a Torah perspective, of course, we always have to be studying. And it's not just Torah that never ends, while mealtime does end, but it's that the more one learns, the hungrier one gets. Rav Moshe Feinstein was more hungry for Torah than we can ever imagine. You know, my Rebbe's family, Rav Schachter's family, has a collection of pictures that they took over several decades of Rav Schachter just learning in the oddest of places, usually when everybody was standing around waiting for something. So he always had a sefer. Rav Shai told me that in the few minutes before he was going to walk down to the chuppah, when the crowd was getting seated, his father pulled out a mishnayis and said, we have some time, new, let's learn together. His kid's ready. Let's learn together for a few. We have a couple of minutes. We should learn some mishnayis. The hunger for Torah, it doesn't hurt. It's an exhilarating kind of hunger. And maybe based on these similarities and differences, we can answer the questions that we began with. Yes, certainly, the Torah specifically singles out these two experiences for a bracha, not despite their being opposites of each other, but because they are opposites of each other. To understand spiritual growth and yearning, it's important to use our innate knowledge of physical growth and yearning to understand by comparison and by contrast. A bracha is recited midaraisa after food, because that's when a person is finally satisfied and he doesn't need any more. A bracha is recited midaraisa before learning, because the prospect of a new adventure in Torah learning, of new vistas of knowledge opening up before a person, is the greatest way to express the excitement of a new day. And there is no bracha after learning, not only because we're never truly finished, but because the mechayev of birchas hamazon, what makes you chayev in benching? V'achalta? Visavata uverachta. A person only says a bracha after once he's satiated. But with Torah, you never get to the point of visavata. There is no visavata when it comes to learning Torah. Chazal could acknowledge the excitement of the prospect of eating and demand a bracha before a meal, but they could never conceive of a situation where a person is satisfied with his Torah learning, where he reaches visavata with his Torah learning, and therefore require a bracha afterwards. So perhaps this is a valuable message as we get ever closer to Chodesh Elul, that the challenge for us is to learn like we eat. Make sure that we have a steady diet. Make sure that we have a diverse diet each and every day. And we should also learn better than we eat. We should show that we're always hungry for more Torah and that we never reach the point of the savata. We're never satisfied with our Torah accomplishments. That we're always looking to achieve just a bit more in our learning and in our avodas Hashem. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great Shabbos.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Shalom, Rabbi. Thank you. Have a good Shabbos.
Shabbos. Thank you.
Take care.